listening assiduously will miss those few opening words. Okay, so what we've got here is a fake gun. And one of the things that's nice about it is it's perfectly designed to shoot and drop at the same time. So when I cock the gun, notice that this thing sticks out. So when I put the ball on this side, it's going to fall at exactly the same instant that the gun shoots. And I can have this other ball here. So supposedly, no squirrels are going to die as a result of this process. But if the gun is level, looks about level to me, these things should hit the ground at the same time, and we should hear one click. So we'll see if that's true. Ha ha ha, no one click. So it might have been level, but it wasn't well aimed. I trusted Adam to have this thing working. I didn't even test it. Try two, right? Make sure my calculator is out of the way. It's not a squirrel, but I bet it's going to miss on the other side. Wouldn't that be ironic? There, one click, right? So they're falling exactly together. And we can treat the two sides as totally separate. And we're going to package together the X and Y components in one thing, which we're going to call a vector. So a vector is just a fancy way of putting together the X and the Y components in one thing and calling it one thing. And we're usually going to denote vectors on the board with little arrows on them. Not uncommonly, vectors are denoted in bold. I can't do that very well on the board. In your book, they're typically using suspenders and belts. They're putting bold and they're putting a little arrow on top. So very commonly, we're going to be doing the following processes. We're going to be going from a description of a vector in terms of its magnitude and direction into the X and Y components. And this is exactly the same thing as going from polar coordinates to rectangular coordinates. And exactly the same process applies on your calculator. Most of the homework problems deal with displacements. That is to say, if you walk north for 5 feet, and then you walk east for 3 feet, and then you walk west, crash, for 1 foot, you know, where are you? So that's because we already know how to add up displacements. In general, if we're going to add vectors, what we're going to want to do is to put them tip to tail, right? Because that's how my displacement works. Wherever I was at the end of my first displacement, that's the start of my next displacement. All right, so if I have a vector here and I have a vector there, and I want to figure out what the sum is, what I want to do is to move this vector to the tip of the other vector. And then the vector that goes all the way is the sum. If we want to subtract vectors, well, one way of doing it would be to say that we're going to multiply this vector by minus. So let me give these things names. This is going to be A and B. So this thing here was A plus B. So I could multiply b by minus 1, which would invert it. And now I can add it to a. OK, so we can multiply it by 1. That inverts it. And then we can add in the normal fashion. What is often a handier way to do is, and it's a little bit confusing, remember before we very carefully put the things tip to tail. But instead, I'm going to put the tails together. And then I'm going to want the vector that goes from B to A. You can see my drawing was only approximate, but those two vectors are pretty much the same thing. Either one is legit. The way we can see that that has to work is because now this and that are all set up exactly to be added, right? We've put the tail of this vector at the tip of that one. And apparently the sum of those vectors is A, and we know that A minus B plus B better equal A. So subtracting vectors is like going from tip to tip, and adding them is like going from tail to tip. Yes? That was your question. So if we imagine that we have some kind of crazy path throughout space, I can have a vector that points to where the particle is now, I can have a vector that points to where it is in the future, and yet further in the future. So let me call these R1 and R2 and R3. Then this little vector here, that's going to be R2 minus R1. Because it's going from the tip of one to the tip of the other. It's going to give me the subtraction. And this little vector here is going to be R3 minus R2. Okay, so these displacement vectors show where you were from one spot to another. Now, in terms of x and y coordinates, I hope it's clear that what I'm going to be doing here is subtracting the x coordinates and subtracting the y coordinates in order to get what that vector is. And if I were adding vectors, I'd just be adding the components. So once we've got these vectors, we're going to do exactly the same things we did in chapter 2. We're going to form average velocities and average accelerations, and then we're going to form instantaneous velocities and instantaneous accelerations. So the average velocity vector, that's going to be the change in the vector position, the displacement, divided by the time. And of course, it's going to be made up out of the change in the x position divided by the change in time, and the change in the y position divided by the change in time. So the components of the average velocity vector are just the x and y components of the average velocity that you would have calculated in chapter 2. But you know, we're not so much interested in averages, we're really interested in instantaneous ones. And there we're going to do this process, calculus process, of taking the limit of two points very close together. And that's just going to do exactly the same thing as what it did before. We're going to have the limit of the instantaneous velocity in the x direction and the instantaneous velocity in the y direction being the x and y components of that vector. So if you think about that process, if I have two points, let's start with two points that are widely separated, the average velocity vector is going to be in that direction. As I bring these points closer and closer together, the average velocity vector is going to end up very close to the tangent to that curve. So this instantaneous velocity, this is going to be tangent to the curve, and these average velocity vectors are going to be parts of secants that connect two points on the curve. Okay. So far, it's just putting the x and y components together and calling them the fancy name vector, and I don't think there's a whole lot new. There's one kind of tricky thing when we try and do the same thing to get the acceleration. So for the acceleration, the average acceleration, what we're going to do is have different velocity vectors and divide them by time. So I might have the velocity vector at this time, let me call that time 2, and the velocity vector at this time, let me call it time 1. So to look at the difference between these two vectors, I want to bring them to a common origin. So 2 is going to look kind of like that. And then the change in velocity is going to be a vector that looks kind of like that. So that seems different to me. That is to say, we kind of think of accelerations as being in the same direction as velocities. But here you can see that the change in velocity is nothing like the same direction as the velocity vector. They can be nicely perpendicular. Okay, if something's moving in a straight line, then the velocity vector maybe starts slow and then gets big, and you can see that the change in vectors between those two is going to be in the same direction as that vector. So if we have motion in a straight line, then the acceleration and the velocity will all be in the straight line. But if we have a curved path, then the acceleration doesn't have to be in the direction of the velocity. And it very commonly isn't in the direction of the velocity. And that seems pretty surprising. So I'll learn, for example, in a couple of weeks, that if something is going around in a circle at a constant speed, right? So same number of miles per hour, if we calculate the difference between these vectors, we're actually going to get an acceleration that points towards the center of the circle. Okay, but we're not worried about that case now. The main thing to realize now is that the acceleration vector doesn't have to point in the same direction as the velocities. It not uncommonly can point in a totally different direction. But you always would go about calculating it the same way, looking at the change in those components. Question?
I think I follow like where vector 2 comes and meets vector 1, but I'm not quite following the last part of it.
So let's deal with this sort of case. So let's say I have a velocity vector like that that's tangential to this circle. And let's call that the initial point. And here I have the same speed, but in a different direction. Let's call that point 2. So to calculate the average acceleration, I'm supposed to subtract them. In order to subtract them, we could do this multiplying by minus 1 and adding. But I think the easiest thing to do is to take this vector and just move it, so that it has the same tail as the previous one. And then you remember, so this is the same vector. I've just moved it, transported it. So this thing here, that's equal to v2 minus v1. Let me make one quick comment. Very commonly, I'll do what I just did as a shorthand for v2 vector minus v1 vector. I'm just saving a second by making the arrow longer. There's nothing else that's implied by that longer picture.
So in subtraction, it can either be tip-to-tip or tails-to-tails?
Tails-to-tails. I've always done it tails-to-tails. Okay. Tip-to-tip probably works too, okay. But I've never done it that way.
How do you know which direction your final answer is going to be in subtraction?
Yeah, so, which way does it go? That's your question, right?
Yeah.
So the way I remember it is that it's the vector that when I add it to the first vector, I get the second vector. Or if you like, you can just remember that it goes from this thing to that thing. It goes from the thing that's being subtracted to the other one. Right? So that if this is A and this is B, then A minus B goes from this one to that one. And quite naturally, B minus A is going to be the exact opposite. Okay. So vectors are going to be all the time sorts of things. Probably half the quantities that we're going to be talking about in this course in 105 are vectors. So velocity, acceleration, forces, electric fields, magnetic fields, angular momentum, all of those things have direction in addition to magnitude. Some examples of things that aren't vectors, which are called scalars, These are quantities that don't have any direction, would be quantities like mass and temperature and energy. Those things are not vectors, in contrast to things that have direction and magnitude, which are vectors. Okay, so kind of the plan is, again, to work through some problems from the book. And I'm trying a different way. Instead of Xeroxing, let's do some of these eye quizzes first. So get out your cards. So we denote the length of a vector with these absolute value signs. So here we have two vectors that have the same length. And I'm not telling you anything else about those vectors. What are the possible values for the length of the sum vector? How many of these things are possible? 0, 1, 2, or 3? So far, I see B's and D's. B's and D's. Yeah. People next to each other, B's and D's. So I'm betting the people who are saying B are thinking that I have two vectors that are of length 5, so if I add them up, I have to get something that's of length 10. Is that mostly what people are saying for the B people? And that's certainly a possibility. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are other possibilities too, right? The first vector could be pointing that way, and the next vector could be pointing that way. And that adds up to nothing. And turns out if you think about these things as being on a circle, you can have two things that add up to, so this one and this one can add up to that one. So we can have 5 plus 5 equal 5. So in fact, if you think about it, we can have everything between 0 and 10 for these vectors. Right, so D, right? All of those things are possible. How about for the difference between two vectors? How many of those things are possible? So I see a good number of C's and B's and D's. I'm thinking that the people who are rooting for C think that 0 is not possible. But it is possible, right? If the two vectors are exactly the same, if I subtract them, I'm going to get 0. If they're in opposite directions, then I subtract them, I'm going to get something that's 10, right? The distance between tips is 10. So it doesn't matter whether we add or subtract them, we can get all possibilities between 0 and 10 for the sum. Right? So if you're going to walk 5 feet in any direction and then walk 5 feet in any direction, you could be any place from no place to 10 feet away from where you started. Okay, so a vector lies in the xy plane. For what orientations will both the x component and the y component be negative? So we've got our standard setup, measuring angles from the positive x-axis. What would be required to have the x and the y component to be negative? I think I see majority B's. So B says the angle lies between 180 degrees, that would be 180 degrees, and 270 degrees. So it's pointing like that. And that sure does have a negative x component and a negative y component. Oh, we've done that one. So an ant walks around the perimeter of a rectangular tabletop that is 2 by 1 meters, and it ends up at its original position. What is the displacement and the distance it traveled? I'm not fooling many people on this one. So this is a distinction which is not really very important, but it's probably important to make it at least once. So by displacement, we mean the net vector distance that it's gone. So if it started at some place and it ended at some place, we say that it has zero displacement, irregardless of how many steps it took. So I'm sure that sometimes I will make the mistake of calling a distance a displacement or vice versa. You know, it won't play a big role in any test questions, but you should realize that technically speaking, the displacement is the net distance it's gone, zero for this ant, in contrast to how many steps it took around the table, which would in this case be six. Well, this is kind of a hard question. But maybe it's a place to start. So what we have is this vector g, and we've got a really funny coordinate system where I've moved x and y into a really funny way. I mean, it might look better like that, but that's not how I drew it. I drew it like this. And we're trying to figure out what the x component is of this vector. Which one of these is it? So one way of working problems that's worth thinking about, particularly multiple choice questions, where if you can eliminate things, you can come up with the right answer, is to think about extreme cases and how it would work, and how those equations would work in those extreme cases. So if theta is 0 degrees, would there be an x component? No. So if we think about these equations, which one, if I put in 0, would give me 0? Well, you can put it in your calculator. The cosine of 0 is 1. The sine of 0 is 0, so that's looking good. The sine of 90 degrees is 1, so that one's out. And the cosine of 180 degrees is minus 1, so that one's out. So just by testing that one case, we can see that, as a matter of fact, this one has to be the right answer. So you kind of don't have to know everything in order to answer these questions. Sometimes you can just think about an easy special case and eliminate things down. But why is that the right answer? So we've got this situation where we've got our x-axis, which is at some angle theta, and our y-axis, which is necessarily perpendicular, and g, which is pointing right down. And what we mean by the x and y components is, of course, pieces that are in the x and y directions that give us the right answer. So once we've made that drawing, then it's a matter of, we're thinking triangles, so we're thinking trigonometry, but the angle that's specified is not any of the angles, or at least it's not obviously any of the angles of that triangle. If you think about it, it's actually the same as that angle. And there are lots of ways of coming to that conclusion. So one way of seeing it is that if this is a right triangle, then this and this have to add up to 90 degrees. But that same angle and this also have to add up to 90 degrees. So once we've got that this is 90 degrees, then we have an opposite side and a hypotenuse. And we know that for the opposite side, we're going to have the magnitude of the hypotenuse times the sine of the angle. Well, I said that was a tricky sort of question. Okay, so those are, we call those kind of conceptual questions, where there'll be questions on the exam that are of this nature, multiple choice questions, but three quarters of the exam will be more like problems that are in the book. So I've got a list of problems, starting with 11, and we're going to see how this works. So I Xerox those things usually, but my feeling was you couldn't see them anyway. So I'll try and describe these problems to you, and you can tell me if it works, whether you still want me to Xerox them or not. Okay, so problem 11 says the magnitude of a vector is 35, and it points in a direction that is 325 degrees. Okay, so here's the picture. We've got our x and y axes, and we've got a vector that isn't 0, 90, 180, it's 325, so that's 270. So this vector is all the way over here. And what it asks us to do is to find the x and y components of that vector. So there are lots of ways of doing it. And the one way that works is maybe a little bit surprising. So this has a length 35. You really can use the formula that x is equal to 35 times the cosine of theta and y is equal to 35 times the sine of theta, and actually plug in 325 degrees. It'll work. I hope you can see that the y value better be negative and the x value better be positive. So these general formulas that x is r cosine theta and y is r sine theta, they're true even for these way beyond normal sorts of angles. So another approach would be to think about that angle. Right? So that angle, remember this whole thing has to add up to 360 degrees. So this angle has to be minus 35 degrees. So you can also calculate this fine as 35 times the cosine of minus 35 degrees and the sine of minus 35 degrees. That works just as well. So a final way of working this is to forget about the sine and just think about this as a triangle. And recognize that this side, since it's an adjacent side, has to be 35 times the cosine of 35. And this side, because it's an opposite side, has to be 35 times the sine of 35 degrees. Boy, that's 35 occurring twice is an unfortunate fact of this problem. But I guess it does. And then recognizing that this has to be a negative because it's going in the opposite direction as y. So then by hand saying that the y component has to be minus 35 times the sine of 35. So all of those work, right? So you can choose which one you want. And in some sense, what I'm going to advertise, of course, is figuring how your calculator works. So at least on this cheap calculator, I can just push a handful of buttons and it'll automatically do that. So if I plug in that the angle is 325 and that the radius is 35, I can just push this button and I immediately learn that the x component is 28.67. Of course, I should write that as 3 sig figs, and the y component is minus 2.008. And so if you can figure out how polar coordinates work on your calculator, you can potentially save yourself a little bit of work. And I'm sure it's in your manual, and I'm sure you don't have your manual, but if you Google...
It's 20.08.
Oh, thank you. Yep, I probably didn't look carefully at my exponent. Thank you very much. Yep, 20. Okay, 14. So this is where we're adding up a bunch of displacements. So a hiker starts at camp and moves the following distances. So he's going to move 75 meters north. He's going to move 250 meters east. He's going to move 125 meters at 30 degrees north of east, and then 150 meters south. So I'm sure you didn't get all of that, but we'll see. So what we've got is 75 meters north, and then we're going to move 250 meters east, and then we're going to move, now there's this kind of funny nomenclature, north of east. So that means we want to go generally in the easterly direction, but we want to go inclined at 30 degrees in the eastern direction. So that's going to be kind of like that. 30 degrees, 125 of that. And then we're going to go south 150 degrees. So we can write all of these things as vectors and then just add up the total displacement. Right, so this vector, so let me give these things names. This is going to be 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. So that first vector, which I'll call R1, there's nothing that's in the x direction. It's all in the y direction. So this is 0, 75. And vector 2, it's all in the x direction, 250, and none in the y direction. Let's hold off on vector 3 for a second. Vector 4 is nothing in the x direction, but minus 150 in the y direction. So for this guy here, I have to use polar coordinates, right? So the x component is going to be 125, since it's an adjacent side, times the cosine of 30. And the y component is going to be 125 times the sine of 30. And you two can learn to do this in just a few keystrokes on your calculator. So I claim that this is 108.25. And this, oops, got them backwards. This is 108.25, and this is 62.5. Am I happy with that? I'm not sure I am. And that's what it says. Okay, so we've got an x value that is 108.25 and a y component that is 62.5. So if I want to add up those vectors, all I need to do is to add up all of those components, right? 0, 250, 108, and 0. So that's basically it's 108 and 250. So it's 300.5. And for the y component, it's going to be 75 plus 62.5 minus 150. And that's minus 12.5. Ah, thank you. Which one's wrong?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine what I was doing, right? 358.25. Now, if I want the total displacement, I can calculate the length of that vector by using Pythagoras, by taking this x component and squaring it and this y component and squaring it, adding them up and taking the square root, and I can find the angle. Now I can do that all with the magic button on my calculator, but let's spend a second drawing the situation. So this is a vector that has a big positive x component and a small y component. And what I would do if I were you, and this was a question on the exam, I would draw the vector, label the angle, and then tell me what that angle is. Technically speaking, if you just write down an angle, I will assume that it's calculated counterclockwise from the x-axis. And if that's the circumstance, it either better be nearly 360 degrees or it better be a negative angle. But if you just draw me a picture and say I want this angle, then I know what it is. And I know that this side, without the absolute value, is 12.5, and I know this other side is 358.25. So I can calculate that the tangent of that angle is 12.5 divided by 358.25. And then I can take the inverse tangent of it and get a result. And what I get is basically 2 degrees. Okay, so unless you draw me a picture, 2 degrees is wrong, right? Because the answer is minus 2 degrees or 358 degrees. You can also just kind of go on autopilot and say that the angle is the inverse tangent of the y value divided by the x value.
Were we just doing the angle for funsies, or
what? I don't know if it's part of the problem or not, but we're doing it for funsies if it's not. It's the sort of question that would be asked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if you just plug in these values, the inverse tangent of the minus 12.5 divided by the 358.25, you will get minus 2 degrees. So it looks good. But it'll only work half the time. Because remember that the only values that you'll get from an inverse tangent are the ones that are in the first or fourth quadrant. It'll never give us an answer that's out here. Your magic button on your calculator will give you a correct answer for a full 0 to 360 degrees. So it's another advertisement for learning to use the polar conversion button that I bet is on your calculator. Okay, so what's next on the list is 16. 16 is very similar to what we just did, and 18 is not that similar, but let's do 18 instead. So 18 is, once again, where we're adding a couple of vectors, but they're vectors that connect Dallas to Atlanta and Atlanta to Chicago. And they've drawn us a nice picture. So they say that from Dallas to Atlanta, is 730 miles at an angle of 5 degrees. And then to go from Atlanta to Chicago, it's 560 miles at an angle of 21 degrees. And they want to find out what the direct route would be. What angle and magnitude do we need to go? So for this first vector, the Dallas to Atlanta vector, I can, if I want, figure out that the x component is the cosine of 5 degrees times 730 miles. And the y component is the sine of 5 degrees times the hypotenuse of 730 miles. And I can calculate those all out separately, or I can use the magic button, right? So 5 degrees, 730, I'm trying to advertise learning how to use your calculator, and I get that this is 727.2, and this is 63.6. Now for the second vector, I could, and this will maybe seem a little bit strange, this y component, since it's now adjacent to the 21 degrees, this y component is going to be 560 times the cosine of 21 degrees. And this x component is going to be minus, you can see that it's backwards, it's going to be minus 560 times the sine of 21 degrees. And that should look backwards. Usually you use sines to get y components and cosines to get x components, but that's not how it worked out because this angle isn't in the standard directions. The standard angle is this one here, right? And it's 90 degrees more than that, or 111 degrees. So if I want, I can use that the x component is 560 times the cosine of 111 degrees, and the y component is 560 times the sine of 111 degrees. Or I can push the button on my calculator. Right, so I've got 111 degrees and 560 miles, and I push the button, and I get this x component is minus 200.7, and this y component is, boy, I wonder if I pushed the button right. I'm going to push it again in a second, but I got, 520.8. I guess I believe that. And so I can get the net x displacement, of course, by adding the x components and adding the y components. And what I get for that total vector then is a x component that is 526.5. Do I believe that? Yep, I do. And the y component is 586.4. And again, I can push the magic button on my calculator and I can tell you that this is 788 miles. At an angle that is 48 degrees. Okay, so it's worth learning how to use your rectangular polar converter that is probably present. So 20 is an important problem because it shows us that we can add things that aren't just displacements. So in problem 20, we're going to be adding forces, but it works just the same. We have these two forces that are acting, and we can add them up. All we have to do is get them into the x and y components using some trigonometry, and then we can add them up component by component. Okay, so the picture shows one force that is at 75 degrees. And another force that is at 60 degrees. And this force is 120. And this other force is 80. So again, you can just push the magic button on your calculator, or you can recognize that, say, this x component is going to be 120 times the cosine of 60 degrees. And this x component, you can see that it's negative. So by hand, I'm going to put in the negative sign. The magnitude, the hypotenuse of this triangle is 80. And this is an adjacent side, so this is going to be the cosine of 75 degrees. This y component, it's a side opposite. It's obviously positive. So it's going to be 120 times the sine of 60 degrees. This y component is also positive. It's going to be 80 times the sine of 75 degrees. And then I can just add up the x components and add up the y components to get what the total vector is. And apply Pythagoras to get what the magnitude of that vector is. And some trigonometry to get the angle. If I use the magic button on my calculator, then I have to enter this standard angle, right, which is 105 degrees. So for those interested, the answer turns out to be 185 newtons at an angle of 77.8 degrees. In terms of its x and y components, it's 39.3 and 181. So the magic button, I can't go over it in class because everyone's calculator is different. So what does work is stop by my office, and we can do it together. We can Google your manual and try and figure out what it is. The vast majority of you have like TI-84s or TI-85s or TI-89s, and I know the instructions are there for all of those calculators.